It's in connection with the second angel's message that the symbolism of Babylon is introduced into the book of Revelation. Turn to the 14th chapter there in the second angel's message and notice the 8th verse. Revelation 14, verse 8. And there followed another angel saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. This symbolism of Babylon is enlarged to the next four chapters of the book, culminating in the reference found in the 18th chapter and the 11th verse, or the 21st verse. And a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, Thus with violence shall the great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. And between the introduction of the symbolism of Babylon in relationship to the second angel's message and the final climax, there are symbolisms based in type and antitype that are portrayed here. Notice with me the one in the 16th chapter of Revelation and the 12th verse. And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. This can be best understood in the type and antitype analogy. Where did ancient Babylon sit? On the Euphrates. How was it overthrown? By the drying up of the river Euphrates, that the king from the east could go in. Cyrus, a symbol of Christ. And so you have here a type and antitype in the sixth plague in relationship to Babylon. We find that as far as the 17th chapter of Revelation is concerned, you have the fullest revelation of Babylon, the woman that sits upon the star-colored beast. But as she sits there, she proclaims herself a queen. Notice the 7th verse. Of the 18th chapter. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her, for she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and no more a widow, and shall see no sorrow. In the 17th chapter, she sits there as the queen. But then as you come to the beginning of this 18th chapter, you have this mighty angel descending and crying with a strong voice, saying, Babylon, the great is fallen, has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. And then when the fall of Babylon is complete, what do you have? I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, that ye receive not of her plagues. Again, a type and antitype. When ancient Babylon fell, and the Medes and Persians came in, what call came to God's people in Babylon? Come out of Babylon and reestablish the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem. That was literal. In other words, the call to God's people is to have reestablished in their hearts the temple of the Holy Spirit in all of its fullness. A call to God's people. Now in Daniel, chapters 4 and 5, the reasons for the fall of Babylon historically are given by which it becomes a symbol and therefore a lesson for us. While Babylon literally fell in one night, one day, its fall was the result of decisions made in time. And the decisions that led to the fall of Babylon were decisions made by leadership. This dare not be overlooked. Let's turn to Daniel, the 4th chapter. And there in the 4th chapter of Daniel, we find that God gives a dream to the same heathen king a second time. And the same process is repeated as in the first time. Let us notice the repetition and also the exception that we find here. Beginning with the 4th verse. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore made I a decree to bring in all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known unto me the interpretation of the dream. The same process. Then came in the magicians and astrologers, the Chaldeans and the soothsayers, and I told the dream before them, but they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. Here's the difference. In the first dream, he could not even tell the dream. This time, he tells the dream to those same religious leaders in Babylon, his same counselors, and they're unable to respond whether they knew the dream or not. It's interesting, and we do not know necessarily why, because we're not told. Again, Daniel does not come in the first place. First instance. Did he plan it that way to see? Was he testing to see? What was the situation? Then it says, but at last Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and before him I told the dream, saying. Thus again, Nebuchadnezzar was brought face to face with the utter futility and the worthlessness of his counselors, both religious and political. And then Daniel hears the dream. And the dream starts there in the ninth verse as he describes it to Daniel. O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians. Master of the magicians, and yet not called in until after he called the rest in. Interesting. Because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and no secret troubleth thee, tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen and the interpretation thereof. And thus were the visions of my head and my bed. I saw, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth. The height thereof was great. The tree grew and became strong, and the height thereof reached into heaven, and the sight thereof to the ends of all the earth. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and it was meat for all. The beasts of the fields had shadow under it, and the fowls of the heavens dwelt in the bowels thereof, and all flesh was fed of it. I saw in the visions of my dream, in my visions of my head, upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and a holy one came down from heaven. He cried aloud and said, thus, hew down the tree, cut off his branches, shake off the leaves, scatter his fruit, let the beast get away from under it, and the fowls from his branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beast in the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. And now note, this matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand of the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know how that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever it will, he will, and setteth up over it the bases of men. This dream I, Nebuchadnezzar, have seen, and now, O thou Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation thereof to me. Within this dream, we find a revelation of how the government of heaven operates. Notice that the matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the word of the holy ones. And when the decree goes forth, it says very definitely there that one came down, one of the holy ones came down and make the pronouncement and tell about the decree that's to follow. By the watchers and the holy ones, God does not operate as an autocrat. He does not operate as a single dictatorial power in the universe. As in the seventh chapter, when we see there the judgment, the thousands and thousands that minister under him, the divine watchers and the holy ones come in and they counsel together. In fact, the decision to bring Nebuchadnezzar to his knees that he might find the God of heaven and be saved was all upon the demand of the holy ones. The angel said, thus and so, it can be done, in order that he might be humble, that he might know that the Most High ruleth in the tent of children of men. I'm wondering sometimes what our guardian angels and those that watch us tell heaven is necessary in our experience for us to come off victorious. You see, the God of heaven listens to his messengers that he sends forth, those that minister to those who shall be heirs of salvation. He takes the counsel and then permits the decree to go forth. I'm wondering sometimes if it wouldn't be easier on heaven if we would be more submissive so that we wouldn't have to go through such tribulations in order to be corrected. But the whole picture here opens up a drama of how God operates. And He operates for our salvation, not for our destruction. Now, Daniel doesn't want to say anything. He says here, what does he do? He sits and thinks for a whole hour. He's a stone for 1 hour. His thoughts trouble him. And Nebuchadnezzar says to him, please go ahead and tell it. Belshazzar answered and said, my Lord, the dream be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof to thine enemies. And he goes on to tell him that tree which you saw, that's you. And if there's not an altar in the cross, this is what's going to happen. 23rd version, whereas the king saw the watcher and the holy one coming down from heaven, saying, hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth, even with the band of iron and brass and the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the heart beast of the field, till seven times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my Lord the king. They shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beast of the field, till you learn that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. Then we find something interesting. Daniel counsels the king. Not in matters of state, but in matters of his own individual experience. 27th verse. Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee. Break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. Now here's something that we need to consider. This book, sealed to the time of the end, would have a special meaning to those living in earth's last hour. Now tell me, to what church and to what church alone in the book of Revelation of the seven churches is any specific counsel given? Laodicea. Church the other seven churches, messages and periods. While certain suggestions are made, it's only to Laodicea that you find the expression, I counsel thee to buy of me. And now here is Daniel counseling Nebuchadnezzar. And so we need to have understanding from this that we might apply to our own experience. Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee. But, let's notice 1 year later, 29th verse. At the end of 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. The king spake and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of my kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? The king spake and said, is this not great Babylon? And notice, while the word was yet in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. How fearful the acts of life are. While the word was still in his mouth, the sentence fell. He was driven from men into the fields where the dews of heaven were upon him. He ate meat and food with the oxen, eat grass with the oxen. His body was wet with the dews of heaven till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, 7 years later, lifted up mine eyes into heaven, and my understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever and ever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all that inhabits the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand and say unto him, what doest thou? Now let us think for just a moment. Daniel was disturbed and didn't want to give the interpretation, but it finally came to pass. But what was involved here? What was he fearful about? Nebuchadnezzar out of the picture? What might happen to him? What might happen to his people? He was concerned. And then we have this experience that records down here that Nebuchadnezzar finally confesses that the God of heaven is absolute in the armies of heaven. Even though he takes them into his counsel, they recognize him as the voice, as the final word. He doeth according to his will in the army of heaven among the inhabitants of earth, and none can say unto him, what doest thou? He said, there's no way to question God. But how many questions do we throw at God? We question his dealings in this, we question his dealings in that. We wonder why this, why that. None can say, what doest thou? At the same time his reason returned, and for the glory of his kingdom and his honor was all returned to him. The trump had been bound. I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. And now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride, he is able to abase. But the years of his leadership had left their toll. The golden image had been erected. Defiance against the revealed purpose of God had been set before the people. His devotion to the material is expressed. Is not this great Babylon that I have built? And in the city of Babylon with the hanging gardens, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. The exaltation of self, is not this great Babylon I have built? All of this is Babylon. And Babylon is revealed here, and what is revealed here about Babylon is over in the book of Revelation concerning spiritual Babylon. And we need to understand that. And then we come to the last night in Babylon. Daniel 5. And observe there what happens. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Now think. A feast when the city was under siege. Feasting when the armies of the Medes and Persians were outside the city having it surrounded. What's that saying? Any parallels? Then on top of it, he defied the God of heaven. Notice verse 5. No, it's verse 3 to 4. Then they brought forth the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. And the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines drank in them wine. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass and of iron, and of wood and of stone. They took the very sacred vessels of the God of heaven and drank to their pleasure. Now notice how quickly and with what swiftness the finality strikes. In the same hour came forth the fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance was changed. His thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loose and his feet and his knees smote one against another. If there was ever a fear in the heart of a man, there was a fear in the heart of the drunken king, and he sobered up pretty quick. In the same hour, the final straw was not something big. It was an act committed in the routine of pleasure. But in that act, the unseen line was crossed, and the last night of Babylon had come. Compare this with the close of the probation of the Jewish nation. It was not Christ hanging on the cross. It was not the Son of God dying for mankind. What was it? The stoning of Stephen. Now, who was Stephen? Now, you see, with our hindsight, Stephen was the first Christian martyr, one of the seven deacons for the Christian church, and we glorify the name of Stephen and the work that he did and his forthrightness. But let's go back there and put ourselves in the time in which Stephen lived and find out about it. Now, when they came to deal with Christ, because they wanted to kill him, with whom did they deal?
the Roman government, the Roman nation, to with Pilate. They found it essential that they had to go through at least a form of law. But Stephen to them and to the Romans was so insignificant that they felt secure that they could take him out and stand him and get by with it, there wouldn't be a question asked. But in that single, simple act, insignificant, if you view it from where you back there in that time, the Jewish nation crossed the unseen line. The 49 weeks, the 490 years, the 490 days were ended. That should be a lesson to us. It is not going to be some great thing that may cause us to step across the unseen line. How careful we should be with the little things and the little decisions in life. Let's see what led up to this thing. What led up to this act. It is true that a prior decision had been made. But what was that prior decision that led up to the final? There in the fifth chapter, we find that Daniel gives Belshazzar a little talk, beginning with the 18th verse. O thou king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people and nations and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he slew, and whom he would keep alive, he kept alive, and whom he set up, would set up, he would, and whom he would put, and whom he would, he would set up, and whom he would put down, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. He was driven from among the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was as the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointed over it whosoever he will. Here's Daniel reviewing for Belshazzar the events in the closing of Nebuchadnezzar's life. And notice now what he says. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords and thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver, gold, brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, thou hast not glorified. What is he saying? Belshazzar, you knew truth, and you did not follow in that truth. The rejection of truth leads to the crossing of the unseen line. So it was with the Jewish church nation, and so it will be with all churches and nations. A church and nation, or church or nation, need not be Babylon to repeat the history of Babylon. Let's not forget that fact. It's history, self and defiance of God, His will and purpose can be in any experience, and the result will be a fall, a rejection, and comes as a result of the rejection of truth. Light knowledge that we have, and we turn aside, then we cross the unseen line, if we continue in that path. Now let's look at the message on the wall. The 24th verse. Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the writing that was written, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. You know, Daniel didn't have any problems with reading it. Very clear to him. And he says further, this is the interpretation of it. God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed the balances and found wanting. Perish, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Here are the words, the idea that God has numbered the kingdom and finished it. He went into the details, he numbered it. The accounting had been made, all was taken into account, it was finished. It was weighed in the balance of the sanctuary. Now we need to ask ourselves, what is the message of these chapters sealed to the time of the end? What's the message in here in the fall of Babylon? I want you to keep in mind that an organization
does not have to join the Roman Catholic Church to follow in the track of Romanism. A church does not have to be Babylon to be weighed in the balances of the sanctuary. And don't forget that fact. In the Eighth Testimony, page 247, speaking of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, it says clearly that she will be weighed in the balance of the sanctuary, and it says plainly, by the light bestowed and the opportunities given will she be judged. The same as in the case of ancient Babylon. Opportunities given, light bestowed, will she be judged. The Bible record that we have here in the book of Daniel affirms that the decisions made by leadership bring the final judgment of God upon the whole. And this needs to be carefully put down and thought through. And I repeat it again. The book of Daniel shows in its fourth and fifth chapter that the decisions made by leadership bring the judgment upon the whole. And then this means in turn that the individual decisions must be made in harmony with God's judgment. Let me explain. As God looks at the direction that's carried, or the organization is carried by leadership, and they're laid in the balance of the sanctuary and they're found wanting, then God pronounces sentence. Now I as an individual must then relate to that. I must either concur in the decision that God has made in relationship to the organization, or I must defy the decision of God and not follow what God intends. I either agree or I defy. I either recognize it, acquiesce to it, and respond in an action. In the book of Daniel here, we find that Daniel as an individual served in two roles. He was a restraining influence as long as it was possible to restrain. What did he do in the fourth chapter? When Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, he went in and interpreted. He told the king, it would be good if it could be to somebody else. I counsel thee. Daniel not only shows, as far as the role of the individual, to let his influence be there as long as possible, but he also shows the example of acting on his individual responsibility once God moves. Let's take a look at that. You go back here in the picture, into the prophecies, we find that in the first year of Belshazzar, now, let's go to the eighth chapter and find in the third year of the reign of Belshazzar, a vision appeared to him, even to Daniel, and where was he? We'll note tomorrow morning in more detail. He saw the vision, and it came to pass when I saw it, I was at Shushan in the palace, which is in the province of Elam, and I saw in a vision and so forth. In the third year of Belshazzar, he was in Shushan in the palace in the province of Elam. Now, the province of Elam is one of the provinces that's the closest to the Persian Empire, Medo-Persian Empire. He was in retirement, as it were, there. Now, the night that the hand went forth and wrote upon the walls the judgment on Babylon being weighed in the bowels of the sanctuary and found wanting, where was he? He was in Babylon because he couldn't come in. He couldn't be going out and brought in from Elam when he was suggested by the Queen Mother. He was in Babylon. Why did he come back to Babylon? Didn't he have visions that told him that the next empire was Medo-Persia and was not Medo-Persia pushing upon the forces of Babylon? Was he not known by the Persians? Could he not have asked for political asylum and received it? Why did he fall? Why did he fall back into Babylon before all the forces that were coming there, with all the prophetic knowledge that he had, and with the opportunities that he had to make decisions and go over? God had not yet spoken. But now notice, in the fifth chapter that night, God spoke. There on the wall was the message of heaven. Babylon had been weighed in the balance of the sanctuary and found wanting. It says there in the 30th verse, in that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. And the next night, or the next day, Daniel went over to the service of the Medes and Persians. He didn't take very long to respond to the message that God had written on the wall. He moved as the hand of prophecy moved, but he didn't move until it moved. He didn't move until God moved, and when God moved, he moved, and he moved quickly. He didn't play around about it. And here is this book, sealed at the time of the end, of the message for us, that it's no way that we can play around with the judgments of God when he weighs an institution in the bounds of the sanctuary and finds it wanting. It's time to move. And it's time to do something about it. Because it's perilous not to walk in the light that God has for us at a particular time. Daniel stayed, labored, did everything he could to restrain the forces. But when God spoke, he moved. And he moved quickly. Is there any lessons for us today? The one thing that we must determine for our own eternal safety is whether Volume 8, page 247, has been fulfilled. And if the evidence is clear that Volume 8, page 247, has been fulfilled, then are you going to do as Daniel? Or are you going to play around and delay the decision that is demanded of heaven? That's the whole question. And on that single question is going to hang the destiny of every Seventh-day Adventist.